Hello and welcome to episode 334 of Radio Free Nintendo. I am your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always are Guillaume Bayette.
No more caffeine this time. I've discovered amphetamines.
Oh, good.
That's... He's on meth. James Jones is here.
He didn't explicitly say meth. That...
No, amphetamines. Yes. Come on. I want to keep my teeth.
Come on. Did it together.
You know, speed, man. Uppers.
Yeah.
He's...
Smack.
He's a refined adrenaline junkie.
Right. And John Linneman will be here in just a minute. So we just decided to go ahead and get started.
Not with us as always.
But John didn't have any new business, and so we're going to do that part first. And a little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking about the latest Nintendo Direct, which was a big one. And it really kind of all ties into the future, or the present of 3DS. So that'll be fun to talk about. I know a lot of people have been wanting to hear our thoughts on that, and John will definitely be here by then, if not before. So, kicking off new business, I thought I would go first, and I dug out a game that I haven't talked about in a long time. It's a Wii U launch title, and I played it for, I don't know, 5 hours probably when I first got it, and then had to clear it off the hard drive for a while because I didn't have a hard drive, so I had to clear it off the memory, and then eventually got to re-download it, but then I just finally got back into Assassin's Creed 3. Now, I know this game in the span of time since it first came out back in, what, October, it has gotten a reputation as being a bad game. People just hate it.
Well, it's the worst game ever, right? If it's not as good as the previous one, then it's just shit. That's how the internet works. Opinions.
And the weird one is the previous one was Assassin's Creed 2 Revelations.
Whatever.
Which didn't get very good reviews either.
Okay.
So I don't understand the idea that this one is worse than the previous one. Now, I didn't play the previous one. This is the first one I've played since Assassin's Creed 2, just vanilla. I still think this is a really good game. Now, it's got some flaws. It's got some technical problems. It's got some design issues that just make it feel a little bit dated because they're doing things the same way that they have since the first Assassin's Creed, which came out, 4 or 5 years ago at this point.
Which would make a lot of fucking sense if it wasn't in a time era with guns.
Yeah, no, there are plenty of guns in the game. But this one's set during the Revolutionary War, and I talked about it, 4 months ago or whatever. It was the last time I played it. Picking it back up again, I was a little bit confused at first as to where I was and what was I doing before I left off and, where do I go now and what did all the buttons do? The control scheme was a little bit weird in this series. But I picked it back up pretty quickly and jumped in and almost immediately was in the Boston Tea Party. So that was pretty cool, which consisted of me being on a couple of ships that were connected by gangways and British soldiers kind of approaching from the sides. And there were a lot of my friends on board the boat throwing tea off into the water. And I could help out with that, but mostly they were depending on me to defend them from the soldiers who were coming in from the sides. And so you can see a meter that kind of shows how much of the tea is left.
The tea meter?
Yes, the tea meter.
There's a fucking tea meter.
It's true. It was boxes of tea. But anyway, it was just a neat experience, and it was a kind of a cool setting. There were these mobs of people cheering us on over there on the docks. But they weren't able to hold the soldiers back, so I still had to go over there and kill some redcoats. And anyway, I left off right before the point where you start getting intimately involved in actually notable events that you read about in school. So I had played through all the setup part where you play as the main character's father for like 3 hours, and then you play as the main character when he's a child, and then you see him grow up, and then you go through this training period to become an assassin. And you go into Boston finally, and you kind of learn how the city is laid out and what all is going on there. It's a pretty long setup. I'm not going to call it a tutorial because it's really not. They are teaching you various things about the game, but you're playing the game and it mostly plays like Assassin's Creed that whole time. But it's a lot of setup before you get into the meat of the game, which is this Forrest Gump kind of thing where they're throwing you into all these crazy historical scenarios and you get to play a part in it. And that stuff's really cool. I mean, after the Boston Tea Party, I went on last night to do the Battle of Lexington and Concord, and then we went to the Battle of Bunker Hill. And then now I'm actually just entering New York for the first time. It's going to be really interesting to see how they portray New York and how they differentiate it from Boston back in the, you know, the 1770s. So, I'm still really enjoying it. Like I said, I think it looks fantastic. I think the Wii U features are nice because they're able to move a lot of the UI off the TV screen and put it on the gamepad if you're playing with that, which makes the TV screen just, it makes the presentation on the TV look really beautiful because it gets rid of all that distracting, you know, virtual reality stuff that's part of the series. And then, it is buried in the options menu, but you can play the game on just entirely on the gamepad, which is nice for me if I'm kind of moving around the house doing different things. Maybe I'm watching a, you know, some thing on Hulu on my computer and I want to keep playing and then I go back to the TV and I want to put something up on there. So it's nice to just be able to move around. And yeah, I still really like the game. I don't understand the haters. I didn't understand most of the criticisms at the time when it first came out. Now most of the, you know, the negative reviews are by people who've actually played more of the game than I have at this point. So I'm open to the idea that something might go horribly wrong here in the second half of the game, but I'm still enjoying it. And I guess I should note, I actually like the first Assassin's Creed, even though a lot of people hate on that. And I didn't think the second one was all that much different. You know, I think it refined a few things, but for the most part, it had all the same good things and all the same bad things as the first one. And yet everyone seemed to love it, even though they hated the first one. So I've never understood the critical reaction to this franchise.
Ever. I think at this point, certainly fatigue has to be setting in.
I think that is a big part of it.
Because Ubisoft is cranking these out in a way that just defies reason.
Which they shouldn't.
No, they shouldn't, because it is going to hurt quality. I mean, I think what you said, that it doesn't really feel that different from previous games, is probably a symptom of the sheer volume of these things they're putting out. You can't really do that much with the franchise if you're having to meet a yearly deadline.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it plays very similarly to the previous ones, other than the ship battles, which I need to go back to. I think they're mostly optional after the first time you do it, but it was so much fun. I want to go back and actually just do some of those because I enjoyed them. Oh, I also met George Washington in a cutscene.
Yeah, because she's just chilling out.
Well, no, actually, you're there at the reception when he accepts the command position of the Revolutionary Army, which is cool. At that point, they start calling him Commander in Chief, even though, of course, the office of the president doesn't exist yet, and it won't for years to come. But they're calling him the Commander in Chief, so it's interesting that they rolled that into the executive, you know, government position later on. Anyway, I mean, I thought the voice actor for him was really good. The accents are really all over the place in this game, which is kind of funny in cutscenes because some people have British accents, some people don't, and I'm not really sure there's a lot of historical accuracy or consistency in how that stuff is done, but it's just kind of fun to see George Washington walking around talking. It kind of gave me a similar vibe to like watching the movie Lincoln last year. You know, like no one really knows probably what these guys sounded like, but it's just kind of interesting to see how, you know, one given actor or voiceover producer kind of approaches this character and chooses to characterize him.
It's kind of weird, especially for older ones. Lincoln, we have some idea because there are people who wrote about
written reports. And,
I mean, people who lived during his lifetime and heard him speak were able to sort of do impressions of him on recordings. But yeah, Washington, we don't really know. All we have are descriptions that are kind of like historical art of leaders where they, you know, it's as accurate as the leader wanted it to be.
Yeah. So I know this stuff sounds tangential, but actually to me, it's a big part of the game itself. You know, it is, but part of the reason you would play this game is because you want to experience these historical events during the Revolutionary War and get to have an interactive experience in this setting that you've never really done in a video game before. And I think it's really cool. You know, and some of the ways they try to weave in the whole Assassins versus Templar storyline into these real events are potentially questionable, but I still think it's interesting, you know? So anyway, I still like it, and I think you should play it.
Yeah, I planned on getting it, but then the reviews came in and I just wasn't hearing what I wanted to hear about the game. Like, I, you know, we said that fatigue started setting in for the franchise, but really, like, while playing Assassin's Creed 2, I went from really enjoying it to being fatigued of it. Like, there were some problems in its design, I thought, that really didn't get worse, but I certainly got more annoyed with them as I went along. And so, like, the whole stuff about combat not really mattering, you know, like, you can just rush enemies and, like, the stupid archers on roofs that you could just kill their buddy in front of them, and you had ample time to just walk over to the next one and kill him as well, as he was witnessing you just, you know, shoving your blade in his friend's neck.
That's sort of Assassin's Creedism. I mean,
I got tired of that, and I was really, really disappointed when they didn't fix that.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of goes back to even the first game where the joke about the combat was, hold on, guys, one at a time. Let me take care of you one person at a time. And that this series probably needs like a year-long hiatus to just sort of find itself. And I'm pretty sure making you captain of a pirate ship does not constitute said hiatus.
No.
It's a cool idea, and I'm actually looking forward to 4 because I think, you know, obviously they're going to rely on those ship mechanics that are really good. And it's a very different setting from anything before, just like, you know, just like New England was. So, you know, being out there on the water, I do fear they're going to fall into the Wind Waker trap of, like, it's going to feel like you're just kind of on the water forever and ever. And, you know, it's already a problem in this game, in Assassin's Creed 3, in that it feels like too much of the game is just you running from one place to another across very long distances, because you can call a horse, but even the horse doesn't feel all that much faster than just running. And there are fast travel options, but only in certain parts of the map, or you can only use them across the frontier, which is kind of the interstitial area. But like, once you get into Boston, you can't fast travel from one part of Boston to another, and running from one side to the other can take 5 minutes. So to me, that has a potential to be even worse once you're kind of moving from island to island, you know, and there are actually large expanses between locations.
And to be fair, look, they're just saying Assassin's Creed 4 is going to be very realistic. It's going to take about 3 months to get to Port Royal and then about 3 months to get back to Martinique. It's fine. You know, it's just start the game, go live your life for the next 3 months and come back and you'll be there.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously do some fun things with scale, because you can run from Boston to New York in Assassin's Creed 3.
In the first game, you could run from Jerusalem to Acre. I mean,
oh, that's
it's
true.
It's like, that's
like 1,000 miles or whatever.
That's a really long distance. Also, there would have been like 8 armies in your way.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right, well, John Lindemann just joined us, everybody.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? It's great to be here.
John, you're about... It's a good thing you came, because you're about 40 minutes away from me going apeshit on Earthbound fans for being dumb babies.
Oh boy, everyone look forward to that. I'll defend you, Earthbound fans, don't worry. I am one of you.
I'm one of your dumb babies.
I am your kind.
I'm through taking sides, all right? I got burned from the Holy Wada apology thing, so
yeah.
I'm not going to state my opinion anymore. It's just pure, from here on out, it's pure objectivity.
I say this week it's Guillaume's turn to like cause a shitstorm.
Yeah, well, I already did. Actually, hey, I'm glad you brought this up. I drew a list of more arguments I thought why the Wii Tiny is a bad idea and Nintendo shouldn't do it. So let's go through them.
Because it's a
Hold on.
Let's stop everything to discuss this hypothetical that has no chance of happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
More anyway, arguments. Actually, what we're actually going to do is move on to James for new business.
Oh, God. We're going to talk about Aeroporter, which is on sale this week, which is still way too expensive. So
it's $3 right now. You're saying this game is not worth
$3? It's not worth $3. So of all the Guildo 1 games, this was always the least interesting to me. Basically, you control...
Even though it's Yute Saito?
It's not Yute Saito. Yute Saito must be on Ritalin or something. This isn't him. This game would be way weirder if it was him. Basically, it's a game where you control the luggage racks at an airport. You sort the bags. That's your job. That's the game. You sort bags by color. Sometimes you get a VIP's bag, and his bag has to go in the airplane first for some reason. And if you don't,
so there's a lot of games you could boil down into the premise, and they would sound stupid. But
this one just happens.
The playing of it, what does it actually involve? I mean, is it basically just like a colored block puzzle game?
Kind of. So basically, you press the L and R trigger and make the it's a series of luggage carousels stacked one on top of another. You press the R trigger and part of the carousel drops to the carousel below it. So on all of them, you press the L trigger. The ones below rise to the ones above them. That's basically the whole game. You're trying to get all the baggage of one color on a the matching carousel and then load it into the plane. That's the game. And as you go, you get more carousels. And you have to manage more of them. And they all come in at the top, so you have to kind of fish them down to the bottom without causing too much confusion and having too many get to the bottom that are the wrong color.
Well, I could see that having some sort of like art style kind of appeal. No?
It's pretty dull. And it gets going relatively aggressively at the very beginning. I mean, the first few are like, whatever, great, whatever. And then the game starts doing weird stuff. It's like, alright, there's a VIP bag. I know you cleared it, but you didn't put the VIP's bag in first. So you have to repeat this level. It's like, really, game? Really? We're gonna go through this now. This is life.
How would the VIP even know if you loaded his bag first?
I don't know!
First?
He's apparently watching the baggage
carousel. He's not
going to
see it until it's back off the plane.
He's watching the baggage carousel.
The bag is the VIP.
He's always described as being the mayor of a neighboring town. It's like, are you fucking serious? This is where we're at, huh? I'm going to say this. Occasionally, other stuff comes down, like bombs. You have to get to the car waiting to pick them up. Because
there's a car that picks up bombs?
Yes. You'll get an alert. We have a suspicious package, and it's a bomb. It's like not even a package. It's just literally a black bomb with a fuse on it that's rolling around.
Well, that simplifies
that's the
things.
Suspicious package. Okay.
It does make the airport security before that point seem somewhat questionable, I'm going to say.
Sir, I don't know if you can check that.
We're going to have to put your name on it. Hold on. You have to sometimes buy fuel, gasoline, that comes in a canister that they just drop onto the luggage carousel, and you have to get to the very bottom of the luggage carousel.
That's how they fuel the carousels.
They fuel the very electric luggage carousels. I don't know. It's weird, but it's not like really enjoyably weird. It's just like the game will introduce something, and you're like, yeah, that's weird. And then you're pretty much done with that particular weirdness. One point I had a piece of luggage that was in the shape of a ball, like a large ball. And I had to, it was standing in place as the carousel moved. So all the luggage would back up behind it. And I had to tilt the 3DS to make it move.
Oh.
So it rolled around.
That's cool.
That was cool up until the point where I realized that it was really just kind of inconvenient. I'm constantly tilting the 3DS instead of managing the up and downs. You can turn the lights off to save fuel. I don't know. It's just not that interesting, which is a shame because the other two that have come out in Guild 01 are really, really interesting games.
Yeah. Well, that's why they release it in the package in Japan. They just want you to buy the whole package and pay, like, I don't know, 30,000 yen. I don't know what the prices are instead of buying them individually.
I don't know, 40 billion yen, whatever that comes out to.
400 trillion, I don't know, it's 5 million whatever they're using to buy a thing of fuel, so. What's frustrating for me, though, is that, I mean, yeah, Liberation Maiden is really cool. It's really short, but it's really cool. Crimson Shroud is really freaking cool.
Yeah.
And Aeroporter is kind of dull. I mean, it's not bad, it's just boring. But then we have the other game that we've never gotten, Rental Bukia De Omase, which is actually like a really interesting looking game. It's a fantasy rhythm RPG. It's like basically you play as a father and son who make weapons for heroes via a rhythm game.
It's kind of the like weapon store simulator kind of.
And you pick which weapons for the hero depending on their quest, and the better you do, the better their weapons are. It's like that game seems really cool. Why aren't we getting that one? No, we got Aeroporter.
Well, yeah, but one required a lot of translation, and the other didn't.
But, I mean, Crimson Shroud must have required a ton of translation.
Yeah.
I would guess more than a game where you're just... It's basically a rhythm game. But regardless, they announced during the Nintendo Direct that we're getting the Guild 02 games, which makes me think we're probably never going to get Rental Weapon Shop or whatever, however
You're probably right. Yeah. But going along with that announcement, which we might reference again later in the show when we talk about all the direct news, but all the Guild 01 games that came out in America are on sale until the end of May.
Yep.
So they're all basically half price, I think. And my 3DS right now is downloading a Liberation Maiden because I was like, for $5, I don't care if it's short. You know, you seem to think it was great.
Yeah. Liberation Maiden is a really cool game. I mean, it's got some issues, of course. All these games have issues because I think they're all sort of like mock-ups of what may have been a full game. They're like halfway there kind of games. And then they just said, all right, well, we just won't polish them.
Well, how do they compare to most NES games? Because most NES games cost you $5 on the eShop.
They're obviously much more developed titles. I mean, they're much more sophisticated. A lot of them, I mean, they all lack length. I mean, but Crimson Shroud is a really unique experience. Liberation Maiden is not super unique or anything, but it's very flashy. It's very weird.
Yeah.
It's an enjoyable enough game.
And like all the games are, I mean, they're not like retro. You know, like they're short, but they're kind of
right
modern, and so yeah. Like they're really, they feel like bite-sized modern games.
Mm-hmm. High production values and everything.
Yeah, actually, speaking of, Liberation Maiden is getting a PS3 sequel in the form of a visual novel.
They did that for Zone of the Enders. You remember, for GBA?
Yeah,
there's
a
weird legacy of this.
But that's also got like some weird like tactical game stuff in there too, like. Liberation Maiden, I think it's like Liberation Maiden Sin, is a freaking visual novel. Like a straight up visual novel. Which is just weird. I mean, that's just super damn weird. Hmm. So, congratulations, Japan.
I think I just made a mistake. Your software download has finished. Do you want to continue shopping? People who downloaded this also downloaded Tokyo Crash Mobs.
I saw that! No. Tokyo Crash Mobs!
That's a kiss of death! That's like anti-advertising.
I think I'm gonna regret this Harry Potter download.
I want to say the other one was like Cute Play Witches. It was weird.
It was Dress to Play Cute Witches.
It's only $2 right now instead of $3.
Yeah, that game is on sale too for
50%
saving.
That game
is on sale.
It's still my favorite game to everyone who's looking at me play. Like when I'm online and I'm not currently in a game.
I think Street Passing with Dress to Play Cute Witches is probably the best you can do.
Well, I can't anymore because I erased that.
But you can always re-download it. You can always re-download
it. I'm not gonna.
That's right.
And then
you can clean out the fridge. And
there comes a point where a joke becomes too much work to be worth it, really.
And you know when that joke isn't? During E3, when you're walking around the show floor and everybody's getting dressed to play Cute Witches.
I guess.
Including Mr. Miyamoto and, you know.
Mr. Iwata's like, seriously?
Yeah. Well, no, the person who's clearing off his street passes says, what, seriously?
The person who made the game is there and just like, what, seriously?
The person, I need to find this man right now in the crowd.
Okay, so James says, do not buy Era Porter. If only we could go back in time 30 minutes and tell Guillaume.
If you are like a huge puzzle game fetishist, maybe, you might derive some joy out of it, but it's really...
Yeah,
it's...
I mean, I guess if you've had a long-standing dream of being a...
position that was replaced by a computer in the 80s.
Yeah, a guy that... pulls baggage off of planes, like, I guess that would be
the
modern
that.
Thing. Yeah,
there are no planes.
Anyway, let's move on to Guillaume's new business.
Yeah. So speaking of games on sale, there's one that just ended. So I'm sorry if this is a little bit too late for other people, but I just bought Escape Vector on 3DS. So until last week, it was just $5 instead of $10. So I picked it up. I had been I had heard good things about the game. And this was originally a WiiWare game.
Yep.
It was subtitled Episode 1 on WiiWare.
Episode 1 of 1.
Yeah, basically, I'm assuming that perhaps, like, it's the same content, maybe a few extra levels.
Made from the people who brought you all of your colored notebooks on DSiWare.
Well, I bet they looked at the sales of Episode 1 on WiiWare and said, Episode 2 is not going to be worthwhile. Maybe we should just put out the whole package on 3DS.
Yeah, I had been like I had been looking at it, but I had been hemming and hawing at actually buying the game because of the whole like My Notebook thing. Like, I was like, do I really want?
Is this like the reverse of your Tokyo Crash Mobs guilt?
maybe. Like, how good can this game be? But
people were running out of pages in their digital notebook.
You know, I played maybe like 3 chapters. I don't know how many there are really, but I have a good idea of what the game is about. Like, if I had to make a comparison, it would be kind of a Pac-Man clone, I suppose. But more specifically, yeah, like, it really reminds me of Pac-Man Championship Edition DX.
Except way slower.
It is so much slow. Yeah, it's slower, but you do have a boost button. So
it's kind of a clone of like Pac-Man on the 2600, pretty much.
Come on, that's not fair.
But yeah, like the game is slow, and unlike Pac-Man Championship Edition, it doesn't get faster and faster. So you kind of are stuck at kind of a slow pace, and there's other problems with it. Like, you don't see the whole board when you're playing, like you do originally, because the board is so small.
Right.
But then, like, as you go to, you know, the later levels, eventually you're going to have to use a zoom out button. You have to hold down the right trigger on the 3DS to zoom out to see the whole thing, which is, you know, like, why?
I just face palmed my nose off.
This is so pointless, and it just reminds me of like street passing at PAX or something. Like, your finger gets tired, and I was thinking, like, well,
you just know, tape it down.
Well, yeah, just like Carly did, like, just tape down the right button, because like, what's the point?
And I have the same problem with Assassin's Creed. It's like that game makes you hold the R trigger pretty much 80%
of the time. To roadie run through the game, yeah.
And your finger gets really tired, and it's like, could you do this a different way, maybe? Like,
maybe tap on, tap off?
Like, yeah. I know this is supposedly a stealth game, but in actuality, I spend most of the time playing it trying to run from one place to the other that's miles away.
Yeah.
On foot.
But I can kind of see the need for a run button in, you know, like the way they did it in Assassin's Creed. But a zoom out button, like, just freaking zoom out. Yeah. Why are you making me hold a button? And eventually, like, that's not even enough. Like, you don't see the whole board even when you're zooming out. So that's really annoying. And like, the way it works is that you're basically, you're going along these lines and you're painting them. Like, they're white and you're painting them whatever color, while avoiding enemies that are patrolling these lines. And
that are totally not ghost guys.
Nope. No,
totally
they're not.
Totally not.
So yeah.
Isn't the game, well, the game on the Wii is basically, I'm quoting from the guy who fucking made the game.
Okay.
The game is taking place inside your Wii, and this, you're trying to get out or some bullshit.
Yeah,
like
actually,
that's
kind of cute, because the first time that you boot up the game, like, the first thing that you see is you see kind of a jumble of pixels and a text box saying, like, oh, what's this? Is someone there? Wait, what's going on? Maybe it's the CPU playing tricks on me. He's been really tricky these days. No, I think you're real. Come on, you gotta help me out. Wait. I think these no guys are coming. And then, like, you see the no logo. He's just like, who the hell are these guys? Anyway, like, you gotta help me out.
No, theater by Keel.
This is like the story to Myst.
So is it taking place inside your 3DS this time?
Yeah, basically.
It would be funnier if it was taking place inside your Wii on the 3DS.
No, like, it's just like inside a computer, right? Like, you're playing Tron. Or like the Tron fan fiction. But yeah, like, it's pretty cute. And every time that you clear a level, like, the guy says, like, oh, I've just hacked something, and now you can hold 2 bombs or 3 bombs, and now you can boost. So, you know, like, it's tied into kind of this little story there. And the jumble of pixels seems to be getting clearer and clearer. Now I kind of see like a chubby face with like eyes and hair and stuff. So I don't know, like, maybe it's going to turn out to be a human all this time inside my DS. It's pretty scary. It makes you think.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Hey, Guillaume, do you think you might consider buying this game again if they release Escape Vector Carbon?
Like Need for Speed Carbon?
No, like My Notebook Carbon.
Oh,
oh Jesus.
No!
I'm really not familiar enough with My Notebook to understand that joke, but yeah, I guess that's a failing of mine. Anyway, so, like, the story is cute at the beginning, but then, like, you do see a text box, like, every time that you clear a level. It gets a little bit annoying after a while. And I gotta say, like, as big a fan as I am of Pac-Man Championship DX, like, this is really not quite up there in terms of quality. Like, there's these annoyances with the way that you don't see the whole board that I talked about, but there's also, I don't know, like, you have to unlock everything. And it's just like, okay, the more you play, the more abilities you get. So you have to go back to the original levels and then you can do better and get a better score. And to me, that's not really what arcade type gaming should be about. Like, it shouldn't be about grinding. It should be about getting better at the game. And while you do get better at the game, like, there's also no way that you can get a high score without, you know, unlocking the boost ability. Thankfully, that's early in the game, but I mean, you know, it's just annoying. And there's also, like, they apparently in the first game you had the set number of lives, and once you lost them, like, it was game over. This time they decided, no, like, we're gonna instead give people this kind of weird, like, times two score multiplier that you have to activate before you start a level. And so there's no way that you're going to get a, you know, one of the best scores if you don't activate it first. And that just, like, most of the time, I just don't even want to bother. And it looks like most people don't want to bother either, because I'm looking at the online leaderboards, and the, you know, it doesn't look like the game has really caught on with the people who played it. I can see Neil and, Lord Corbin.
JP.
So, I can see their scores there, but, you know, like, the further I get into the game, the fewer names I see on my friends list. and that also might have to do with the fact that half the time the online leaderboards don't even seem to work. Like, it's just like, yeah, so you know, you see the message trying to connect, connection failed, try next time, and then, I probably won't.
Glowing review of Escape Vector.
Yeah. try again, fuck it.
I really want to enjoy the game, but I'm really glad that I got it on sale, you know, because I don't know how much longer I'm going to stick with it. It's just, it doesn't really have that addictive quality that made me actually want to improve my scores in the Pac-Man Championship.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
All right, so John didn't have any new business, like I said before, but I'm going to go back around, and with the time remaining here in the segment, I wanted to talk about Saints Row the Third, because I've been making my way through this game on Steam. I picked it up for like 10 or 15 bucks during some crazy sale, and you know, the game came out about a year and a half ago. It was Giant Bomb's Game of the Year, which seemed insane at the time. I was like, really? It's that
and
good?
And they heard about it, believe me.
Yeah, I'm sure they did, but you know what? I really, really do like it. And I've only played a little bit of Saints Row before this. I think I rented Saints Row 2 years ago on Gamefly and played it for like 2 or 3 hours and was like, this is not, you know, it's just a GTA knockoff or whatever. You know, it seemed to be slightly more irreverent than GTA, but...
Right. The first game really was a GTA knockoff.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing was like really straight. And it was because there was a long time before GTA 4 came out. Right. And so there was no HD open world game for the first 2 or 3 years of the 360 being out. And so there was a gap to fill, and that's what Saints Row did. But it was basically, yo, this game's a lot like GTA, but it's in high definition.
Right.
Other than that, it didn't really do a whole lot to set itself apart.
And it did only in that it was there was a lot of GTA clones in that era. It just happened to be the least bad one, essentially.
I do think it was pretty much the first one on the
HD systems. Yeah, I mean, but there was a bunch in the late PS2, Xbox, GameCube era. Yeah.
Lots of them,
and they were all pretty uniformly not good.
Well, it was just kind of all ran into each other.
The Getaway or whatever.
Oh,
yeah, there's a lot of that stuff. So anyway, Saints Row the Third really does set itself apart. It really does a lot of things that make it feel not only a lot funnier than GTA has ever been. I don't just mean GTA 4, which is pretty dour most of the time. this is funnier than Vice City, than San Andreas, than GTA 3. It's funnier than Chinatown Wars, which is maybe the funniest that I've played. But Saints Row the Third also does, the pacing is totally different than a GTA game, because basically from the very beginning of the game, they want to throw you into crazy missions. And the goal of the game, the objective, as far as I can tell, is from a design perspective to make sure that every single mission in the game has you doing something really cool that's not quite like anything you've done in any previous mission, and that makes you feel excited. So there's no ramp up, really. There's no missions that are kind of low key, and there's not, you know, you kind of just drive from this place to this place and then it's over and you get some money. Every mission feels like they've done their best to make it as exciting and ridiculous as possible from the very beginning of the game. And it always leaves you thinking, what could they possibly do next? And they always find a way to do something absolutely absurd to take it to maybe not just the next level. It's not like they're constantly one-upping themselves, and they're not taking a formula and they're just trying to push it and push it and push it, because you'd get diminishing returns. They just have you do something completely different that is right. Equally wacky and really fun. Most of the missions are really, truly fun. A lot more fun than GTA missions. And in doing that, they're able to tell the story that is just patently stupid. You know,
oh, yeah.
Ridiculous. These characters completely
are
out
of their minds. Nothing they do is even remotely realistic. They're just comically stereotypical and outlandish. And
that sounds a lot like Lego City Undercover so far. You've got my attention.
Well, okay. Except I don't think Lego City Undercover has a gang led by a Japanese game show cat-headed character who kills people.
It's right. Almost there.
Lego City might have been inspired by this game and the one before it, you know.
Yeah.
But Saints Row the Third, it is absolutely hilarious in a way that very few games are. It's over the top, to say the least. And to me, moreover, you know, the presentation, all that stuff, I would enjoy just the weird sense of humor and just the fact that they went there. They actually do things that you've never seen a video game even try to get away with in terms of comedy. But the missions are just well designed and they're really fun. And this game has true variety, and they do stuff like, you know, you play a mission where, they put you in this crazy, like, vertical takeoff and landing jet that has a laser beam and like rechargeable missiles and all this crazy shit on it. And they give you a mission, and it's not even halfway through the game that you get to fly this thing. And once you beat the mission, it's just at your crib all the time. So anytime you want to, you can just go and hop in that thing and drive it to the next mission. You can use it during the missions in most cases. You know, you play a mission where they give you this crazy, like, laser gun thing. And then when the mission's over, you can use it anytime you want to. Like, you never feel like they're teasing you. You never feel like they show you something really awesome and then they take it away and maybe you're going to have to do all this other bullshit to earn it. No, they just give it to you and then they let you use it anytime you want. And it doesn't really break the game. I mean, it's not a very hard game anyway, but you still have to do the, I mean, if you want to play the missions, you still have to play them, but they give you these awesome tools to do it with. And it gets to the point where it's not even that, you know, I get this new crazy thing that's even better than the one before. It's just crazy in a different way. And it gets to the point where I'm not even sure which one of these guns I want to use. Like, I have like four guns in this one category that are all awesome. And I just switch it up every time because I just want to play around with them. It really does feel like, you know, GTA games, before the open world became a term, they used to be called sandbox games. And Saints Row to me feels like it really is a sandbox. It's a play place. It's a place that you go and you use your imagination and you have all these wacky toys and you just combine them in the craziest ways. Just like when you were a kid and you had G.I. Joe fighting Superman, you know, and Castle Grayskull. I mean, I used to do this shit when I was a kid, you know, and Saints Row does almost feel like that in video game form. And it's violent and it's vile and people curse and they just do the most awful shit you can imagine, and it's really funny.
So I played a brief demo of this 2 years ago, and it was an E3 demo just because it was open for some reason, and it felt like you're basically in the middle of the world's dumbest gang war.
Yeah,
ever. It is the dumbest gang war.
Yeah,
like your gang is the Saints. They just walk around dressed like really stereotypical pimps.
Yep.
Yeah, their color is purple. So like, yeah. Anytime it's actually useful because anytime you're in a mission and you see something purple, you know it's friendly.
Mm-hmm. There's, like I said, there's that gang that's led by a Japanese game show host.
Yep. There's a gang called the Deckers who are all cyber goths.
Yes. I mean, it to go to your point of it being a sandbox game, it literally feels like these are characters from different toy series that have been thrown in to play with one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, kinda. They don't feel like they have anything to do with one another at all.
Right. Just, yeah, these people don't even belong in the same universe. And yet... Yeah. Here they are, you know.
And they're all the dumbest character in their universe.
Yeah, but yeah. But the best thing to me about the game is that it knows how completely ridiculous it is. And it's not not afraid to poke fun at itself or just, you know, like at the start. Like, because I remember I played a little bit. I think I got it on Steam at some point when it was like one of those, you know, three-day sort of things or something. I played the very opening of it, and it's awesome because these guys come out. You're basically – so in the last game, you became this badass street gang. Everybody loves you. You became this bunch of anti-heroes. And now it's like, don't they have like they start off with like their own TV show or their own TV series?
Yeah,
they're like celebrities, but they're supposed to be like underground criminals. But everybody knows who they are. Everybody's dressing like them. Everybody's wearing masks with their faces. So they're walking around and they're like, hey, let's rob a bank. No one will know it's us because they'll think that it's people wearing masks. They'll think it's our fans. It's just completely ludicrous. I was really impressed.
So the best part is, we talked about it before, the recently announced add-on turn sequel where the leader of the Saints becomes president and gets an Iron Man costume.
Yep.
That's awesome.
I can't wait. After playing through probably 12 hours now of Saints Row the Third, I cannot fucking wait for Saints Row 4.
The promo image for that has him standing on the hood of the president's limousine, which of course is a convertible, pointing out like a hood ornament, while his gang is acting like a bunch of dumbasses in the back of the car.
Yep.
Yep.
It's unbelievable.
There's a scene, and I meant to talk about this when I first played it about a month ago, probably. There's a scene very early in the game where you get in the car, and it's almost a parody of those parts in GTA 4 where you get in a car and you have to drive another character all the way across town, and they have this conversation all the way there, and it's very serious, and they're talking about the story and all this character development. In this game, they jump into the car, they flip through the radio, and they find this Sublime song from the 90s, and they're both like, oh man, I love this song. And they start singing along to the song. even though they barely know the words and they're terrible singers, and they sing through the entire song. It's like a 4-minute sequence. Absolutely hilarious. It was like, and this is like in the first hour of the game, and it was so endearing, and it made me like these characters and this world so much. With just a snap of the finger, and I thought, I have never seen anything like that in a video game. And it's absolutely brilliant character moment.
It's mm-hmm. like every character in the game is John and Greg's favorite character ever, Rico.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Eat my bullets!
In summation, I think it's a crying shame that Saints Row 4 has not been announced for Wii U, and I hope Nintendo does something about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, so that's going to wrap it up for new business this week. We're going to take a quick break and come back with a full discussion of the latest Nintendo Direct, which is mostly about 3DS stuff. You will hear much more from John Lindemann in that segment, so mm-hmm. stick around.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
All right, we have impressions of Link to the Past 2 by Carmine Red. Right after the Nintendo Direct, Nintendo hosted an event to show off the latest in wet dreams of hardcore Nintendo fans. Carmine has hands-on the proper sequel to the Super NES Link to the Past with video. Believe me, these impressions are not premature at all.
Oh, definitely go read that.
The video is amazing.
We also have impressions of Animal Crossing New Leaf, also for 3DS, also by Carmine Red. Some people get all the luck. Carmine also got to try his hand at the latest Animal Crossing game, now with less crippling debt.
Ooh, nice. We have impressions, Mario and Donkey Kong Minis on a Move by Aaron Kaluska. Things have changed in the world of mini Marios. Now Mario and Donkey Kong is about laying out pipes to guide your minis.
It writes itself.
Yeah, there's no connotation here. There's
no. It's literally that's the game. Yeah.
There's
pipes.
None anywhere in any of this text. There's no innuendos whatsoever here.
This is all just above the board. Also from the same event, we have impressions for Mario and Luigi Dream Team, also by Aaron Kaluska. Step into the dreams of Mario's little brother and see his dreams of electric sheep. Or just read Aaron's impressions to get his take on the next Mario and Luigi game.
Looking forward to that.
Lastly, we have a review of Shin Megami Tensei Soul Hackers for the 3DS by Kimberly Keller. 16 years after its release in Japan, North America is finally getting the dust off this forgotten entry in the Shin Megami Tensei series. If you're longing for 3DS RPG action, check out this review and then buy the game, because it's great.
Are you going to buy it, James?
Probably.
Oh, all right. Well, you can find all this original content plus a lot more, and you really should go read those Zelda impressions and see the video right over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back, everyone.
No, get out.
We're going to talk about the Nintendo Direct that just happened this week. It was focused on 3DS, and a lot of new games were announced. A little bit of Wii U stuff, we'll save that for later, because it was definitely a minor part of the show. But biggest news of all, Link to the Past 2 coming out on 3DS.
Electric Boogaloo.
So we knew that Mr. Onuma's team was probably working on a 3DS game. I think he's actually basically said as much a few times, but we never knew anything about it, you know. And some people were thinking there might be a Majora's Mask remake or something like that. But actually, this is pretty shocking, I think, for them to go back to the Link to the Past
weird,
world.
At least.
And create a whole new game based on that world, you know, and it's all done in polygons now. They've sort of blended the look of Link to the Past with the more modern look. Actually, mm-hmm. maybe even looks a little bit like a cross between Link to the Past and Wind Waker.
A bit, yeah.
More like the Wind Waker remake. Don't you think it has kind of that plastic figure look?
I would compare it a little bit to that, a little bit to...
I don't know what the Wind Waker remake looks like, because they've never actually shown it.
Yeah, but what we've seen of it, like what
those
we...
Those target renders were super plastic, yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks cartoony, but certainly not in the same way as Wind Waker.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or Spirit Tracks, or, you know, any of those DS games either, Phantom Hourglass. So it definitely has a new art style. Seems to be very controversial. I think it looks pretty good, especially if you look at the 3D video that's on the eShop.
I hate it.
I think it looks pretty nice.
It's fine.
Yeah.
And haven't said a whole lot about gameplay other than obviously it's going to be similar to Link to the Past, my favorite Zelda game and yours. But it's all new dungeons, new overworld. It's a completely new game, new story, new items, new abilities. You see in the videos they showed that Link can sort of turn himself into artwork, which kind of it's kind of like paperizing him like a Paper Mario game, but it makes him flat and sticks him to the wall nearby, and then he can kind of scoot around corners and through bars and windows and stuff like that to squeeze into new places. So that was definitely a big surprise, and nothing like that in the original Link to the Past.
I'm seeing a weird backlash from people who refuse to believe that this is a new game, though. Even though, like, you keep seeing Beltran.
Well, that's partially Nintendo's fault.
Like the overworld that they've showed, the very small part of the overworld that they've showed is pretty much identical to the Super Nintendo game.
Because it's a new game on a new system. I know we just put numbers on them, but it's fine.
Well, no, actually, I think that's a big part of the problem. In Japan, this is literally called Link to the Past 2.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In America, it's just called a new Link to the Past game. It's a placeholder title. In other words, they haven't finalized what they're going to call it yet. But because of that, they've created this totally unnecessary confusion about whether this is a new game. It's really stupid.
Maybe the title Link to the Past 2 just doesn't make sense the same way that, what is it, Triforce of the Gods in Japanese or something like that.
I think Link to the Past 2 sounds fine to me. I mean, I'd prefer they were calling it Link to the Future and doing it a new setting or something. But
no, but I mean, yeah, like maybe it doesn't make story sense. Maybe somehow they've created a plot that has nothing to do with any links to any past whatsoever. Maybe he's got amnesia.
He almost certainly has amnesia, yes.
Link to the Past isn't even a good title for the original game, because he doesn't go to the past. He goes to the Dark World, which is another dimension. It's not the past. It's not the same timeline.
I don't know. Anyway, someone at Nintendo perhaps agrees with you. It's not a good title, and so they're fixing it.
No, they're not. They're going to call it Link to the Past something.
There's more to the game than the title. But some people still argue, like, oh, I think it's going to be more of a rehash. Have you seen a playthrough of that dungeon? Like, we do have impression videos of, an event. Like, people
which
have
played it.
Which
we just talked about in the previous segment.
Yeah.
The news came from a video event that had video of the game. If you watch that video, you know it's not a remake. Yeah.
But right. We have people who played it, and we have off-screen video of Carmine playing the game.
Yeah. Yes. And like, the dungeon is all new. Like, you've never done this in the Link to the Past before.
And there's big fucking jack-o'-lanterns.
It's so weird, though, because I have been arguing with some people who see that it's the exact same boss fight. And they're just like, oh, there you go. I don't like this.
They shouldn't have shown the same boss fight.
I guess not.
I'm sure there's some twist on it in the game, but...
But they should not. I mean, it's just going to... I mean, it's already going to be confusing because it's... Yeah. They should have just showed a brand new boss fight.
But maybe they showed that because they don't want to give away too much, you know, of the new content.
I need to be their PR rep.
Yeah, supposedly Nintendo refuses to talk about the context surrounding that dungeon. So.
Yeah, well, I'm thrilled. I'm a huge fan of Link to the Past, and it's a game that I play every couple years, just play through the whole thing. It's a great short Zelda game. You can beat the whole thing in about 10 hours, and I'm kind of hoping for the same thing here. I feel like the DS Zelda games were way too long and stretched things out way too much and made you go through a bunch of bullshit that I didn't need, and for that top-down experience, the Zelda experience, I feel like, you know, 10 or 15 hours is a really good length for that, and it makes the world more dense, it makes the dungeons more dense. It prevents backtracking. So I'm hoping they kind of go for that scope. But I think it looks nice. I think the mechanics they showed are really interesting. The other part is that they've said that there's a focus on depth in the dungeon. So even though the game is played from a top-down perspective, they're kind of playing on the whole, you know, coming out of the screen in 3D effect.
Justifying that 3D.
Yeah, well, they're using it to take advantage of multi-layered dungeons. And of course, you know, Zelda, ever since Zelda Link to the Past, really have had since Zelda 2, they've had multi-floor dungeons.
Right.
And, you know, in Link to the Past, they actually did some really nice 3D effects with it where you could sometimes, you know, blow a hole in the floor and you could see the floor underneath you. And you know that if you push a block into that hole, it will drop down and then you can drop down and then you can use that block in a room that previously didn't have one. So Link to the Past already had done really creative things with this. And I think this is very consistent what they've shown. It's just that they've made it visually a little more clear about the way things are connected on top of each other, the way these different floors are stacked.
Yeah.
And sometimes those games didn't do a very good job showing it.
It would black out, right? So when you move from one floor to the next, either you take the stairs or you drop down a hole, but it blacks out and then you're suddenly on a different screen and you kind of have to imagine that these two places are connected.
And basically you just said, all right, there's a hole and there's a block here. I need to put this down here. I don't know where it's going to go, but I'll figure it out once it's there.
Yeah. So in this one, you know, you see him using the hammer to pound down one of those whack-a-mole dudes, whatever those are called, and then he stands on top of it, and when the thing pops back up, it launches him in the air like a catapult or a springboard, and now you see him, you know, now you see new floors that were above him before, and now he's, you know, increasing in height, and now he lands on a new floor. So you visually see the connection there, the continuity of the level design. I think it's very clever, but it's also really consistent with the kinds of puzzles Link to the Past was already doing.
Yeah. So I've mentioned before, when they do these 10 o'clock at Nintendo Directs, I can't watch them because I'm at work.
Yeah, I followed it all on Twitter and watched pieces of it later.
Yeah, so unfortunately for me, the first person who tweeted about this accidentally tweeted Link's Awakening 2, which triggered hyperventilating by me. Because that would basically be me just FedExing them my credit card and saying, whatever, just do whatever to it. It's fine.
At this point, that seems inevitable, though. I mean, it might be another 10 years, but...
Yeah,
it kind of seems like that has to happen eventually.
I would overnight the credit card. They could just take it.
How would that work though? Would he just fall into another dream?
It's another fucking Windfish. Windfish fell asleep again.
Would he wake up from, like, was he dreaming within a dream?
Maybe Windfish is actually a narcoleptic. Who knows? I mean, he just goes out again. Link's like, shit, I just did this.
There's sequels of Wizard of Oz and Alice in Wonderland. And
he's talking to, like, Mary, and he's like, look, I know you're a seagull. I know. I'm not going to fall for this shit again. And she's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, no, look, I've seen it. You're a freaking bird, dude.
This sounds just like a Charlie Kaufman movie.
I'm just, can I just be excited about playing a 2D top-down Zelda game with a D-pad and buttons?
No.
Yes. Amen, brother. High five through the internet.
Yes. I agree.
But yeah, like, it's just, you know, I was fine with the touch controls, but there's...
They worked really well. I think historically people are like, they're really bad. No, they were great. The touch controls in those games
were
great.
But sometimes I don't want to be slashing at an enemy. I just want to be, you know, playing traditional Zelda. Like, it's been a long time at this point, and I want to go back to that. But, you know, with, like, new puzzles, awesome new puzzles that we've seen in those videos. I can't wait.
For me, it wasn't the controlling Link, because I do think that worked fine. Mm-hmm. It was that relying on the touchscreen affected the puzzles in the game so much, and it ended up being a lot of drawing paths for things to happen across two games. I just got tired of that stuff.
For me, it kind of took away the arcade-y aspect of it. It always had that kind of little bit of arcade aspect to it that, you know, that the you know, all like you said, Johnny, the drawing puzzles and stuff, it really slowed the gameplay down for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, writing the number, like the order to hit switches, you know, writing it down. It's like, that's not really fun. You know, it's neat. It's gimmicky. It's good use of the technology. But I don't know that that's a good idea for a Zelda game.
I don't know. So. I really enjoyed those games. And maybe I'm in the minority. And also enjoyed the fact they created a race of people who are made of trains.
Nice.
Because there is, speaking of amphetamine, there you go.
But yeah, like I just hope that with the old school visuals and gameplay also comes like old school tutorials, as in very few of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
In the videos that we've seen, they still tell you that a key unlocks a door, which is unfortunate.
Look, it may do other stuff. Look, sometimes a key, you use it to join tables.
Yeah, that's actually called the stupor guide. So if you're actually in it, if you're in a mental stupor and you just don't understand that a key unlocks a door, then that's the guide for you.
But yeah, like that stuff was still like in Link's Awakening and Link to the Past. So I guess, you know, it's acceptable, but please don't tell me that a blue rupee is worth like 5 or 10 rupees every time.
Yeah, seriously. We get it.
I want the game to literally tell you every time you get a key what a key does. It's like, in case you forgot, like, just different ways every time. This key will unlock a door. And the next time it's like, just in case you forgot, keys unlock doors. And by like the 38th time, it's like...
That's exactly what the game will do.
By like the 40th time, the game's like, seriously, just in case you're really stupid, a key plus a lock equals an unlocked lock.
I'm hopeful that the critical mass of annoyance and frustration and complaints from Skyward Sword finally got through to them. And they're going to have some kind of response, because this will be the first Zelda game, new Zelda since Skyward Sword. And I have a feeling that they learned a couple lessons at least. And, you know, the top-down nature of the game is such that it will be simpler in some ways at least. Mm-hmm. But I'm super excited. So this was a nice surprise, and this is the kind of thing I was not expecting them to announce before E3. So it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Another game, which I have not seen video footage of yet, but I think they did show some. This was a pretty big announcement, and probably any other day would have been the biggest announcement, and that's Yoshi's Island 3DS, a brand new sequel to Yoshi's Island.
Like, just before they announced it, they were showing, like, Donkey Kong Country 3 Returns 3D. And I was like, oh, okay, new levels, that's cool, but I'm still not ready to purchase the same game twice. It's unfortunate because I can't really see, you know, other 2D platformers on the 3DS, and then bam, and I'm just, oh, okay, I know what I'm spending $40 on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so amazing.
Easy choice here. Totally new content, you know, better art style, and it's a game I haven't played.
There's, again, like, you can't please everyone. I've seen a lot of bitching about how the art style seems to be a mix of like pre-rendered stuff and bad watercolors, but then again, like, I was reading that on the internet. I think that people like to complain there.
You think?
You get the knee-jerk reactions. I mean, people complain about, you know, why do we need these kind of gateways for content nowadays, where we, you know, send journalists to play things rather than just broadcast the demos out to everybody's systems and everything. It's like, this is part of the reason. I mean, Nintendo Direct, you know, it's an interesting experiment, and I bet you the company is learning a lot from the response they get, because you get a lot of people who just love everything that they show, and you get a lot of people who, for whom it's never good enough. And I think one of the advantages of showing things for the first time at E3 is that there's a limited audience there. They have intimate hands-on time with the game, so they actually get to play it rather than speak out of, you know, based on much more limited information. And then it also takes them time to process what they just played and discuss it with other people in person. And yeah. So by the time you get the information out of them at an event like E3, it's not a knee-jerk reaction anymore. It's still a quick reaction, but it's not, oh my God, look at this, it looks like shit.
Yep. Yeah, I always wondered, I'm not too sure what they gain by allowing basically internet bitching to affect their stock price, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, so the other advantage of the limited events is they get to handhold you as you play it.
Yeah.
So they can make sure you have the optimal experience.
And make sure you understand what you're doing.
Because some of their demos can be fucking opaque as hell. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, we're just going to start in the middle of the game, whatever, it's fine.
This game's called Odama.
here's a microphone.
Here's a microphone, but it's a pinball game. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine.
Well, if you're at a press event and you don't know how to play Yoshi's Island, you don't belong there.
Yeah, this is true.
I'm not the world's biggest fan of Yoshi's Island, but I know most people love it.
Yeah, I love that game.
I do, and I'm still interested in playing it. I was actually tempted by the DS game a number of times, and finally, you know, people just kind of felt it was kind of mediocre, and so I never bothered. But I think that's the other reason this hasn't been the most impactful announcement, is because there's already been a sequel to Yoshi's Island and it wasn't that great.
Yeah.
So they poisoned the well a little bit, but apparently this is probably a new developer, I would assume, because I don't even think Artoon exists anymore.
They've reformed basically as some other company with a very similar name, but all they've done was like work a little bit on We Play Motion, and they worked on like Find Me extra content. I don't know.
Extra
like
it's, content.
Yeah, it's extremely weird. But yeah, their resume is like they haven't been up to much.
Oh, how far they've fallen since the days of Blinks the Time Sweeper.
Blinks the Time Sweeper is a work of genius.
Anyway, Yoshi's Island 3DS. What do you guys think?
I'm psyched for it.
I'm fucking psyched.
Pretty
yeah,
psyched for
I mean,
it.
I'm where Johnny is. Like Yoshi's Island. I'm like, all right, it's fine.
I've always preferred Mario World a lot. But yeah. I'm still going to play this. I'm still looking forward to it.
I was kind of burned by it on N64, to be honest. So it's kind of burned.
That's Yoshi's not the
Story?
Same game,
the sequel.
Though.
What was the sequel? The sequel was
Yoshi's Story. But
Yoshi's Story.
It's not really a sequel.
Yeah.
It's similar, but...
It's its own thing, and it's not really...
It's similar. It is similar. It is.
It's like James calling Donkey Kong Country Returns a sequel to Jungle Beat. It's really not. I mean, it's in the same franchise, but it's not made by the same people, and it's really not the same game.
They're closer.
Yeah, they're closer than that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But anyway, like the Yoshi's Island, I really loved back in the day when I played it. I guess I don't know how many people played it when it came out, but I was one of them, so I'm better than all of you. And I really loved it. I collected everything 100%, but it's a tough game to go back to, you know, like I tried a couple of times, and it's just like once you've seen everything you've seen there is. Did I say that right? Once you've seen everything there is to see in it, it's just like it doesn't really have much to offer else. Like it's a little bit too slow, perhaps. And it was kind of like the start of the collectathon a little bit, you know, like in platformers.
I could see that.
They didn't used to be that collection heavy until that came out and Donkey Kong Country came out. And then all of a sudden it was all collecting all the time.
Like the overworld gives you this full statistical breakdown of everything you've found and what you haven't found in that level. I don't think I'd ever really seen that before.
Yeah, you have to find like 5 flowers, 10 red coins. You have to finish the level with a certain, like, you've got a timer. Anyway, it's complicated. But yeah, like you have to get a perfect score to unlock these special levels. And I do prefer the Super Mario World way where it's just like find a secret exit. That's way more exciting.
Yeah. Yeah,
but no, definitely like a well-made game. Very, I can't wait for this new one.
Cool. Well, so the other big news, there were a few other things, but we did find out Bravely Default Flying Fairy, and well, we don't know. I guess they did call
it Bravely
Default. Okay, that's still a stupid name, but somewhat less stupid. So Bravely Default and Professor Layton 6 are both coming to America in 2014. Yep. Next year.
Europe is getting one
Europe's
of those
both
earlier.
This year, I think.
Oh, really?
I think, cool. Yeah, I think both are coming out at the end of the year in Europe.
So we're probably getting them in January or February.
Another massive, like, Xenoblade-like delay for Bravely Default, but at least it is coming out eventually.
By Nintendo, not by Square Enix.
Does that mean that we're going to get, like, the European voices for Professor Layton?
Probably not.
We're just going to reuse...
Because they changed the voices in Europe, so they probably would continue to use the same voices.
Yeah, but Nintendo of America's new thing is just to let the European branch do the localization.
I don't know that this is the European branch doing the localization. My guess is that Nintendo has other stuff they want to release in that same window in North America.
Oh, yeah. Well, the rest of the year is looking pretty crowded for 3DS.
Yeah, isn't so much letting Europe localize as it is they've got enough stuff, and they wanted to push those out a little ways.
Hmm. Well, Link to the Past is going to probably be the big Christmas game.
Yep.
But probably a month before that, you've got the new Pokemon coming out for 3DS, and that's going to be earth-shattering for the sales
So it's
market.
Actually, it would make a lot of sense to push those games back, because both Link to the Past and especially Pokemon will sell 3DS units, as will the Christmas holiday.
Yep.
So those games will pick up additional sales simply because there are more potential buyers.
Just think of that, a bundle with a Link to the Past 3DS.
That's... gonna happen, buddy.
It's gonna happen.
Probably
in
gonna
Japan,
happen,
buddy.
Yeah, I got pissed off at green the fact 3DS? That I missed the black one, the original, the black 3DS.
Yeah.
With that thing was hot.
I can see them doing like a Link green 3DS with a Triforce
in Japan
decal on it. You know.
Yeah, I'm looking for an excuse to get a 3DS XL. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I mean, Japan's getting that new Luigi and Mario 3DS LL, as they call it.
Yeah.
Which looks ridiculous.
Well, the Animal Crossing one is pretty ridiculous too. white with all the Tom Nook leaves and stuff all over it.
They're both it's monochrome Luigi's on this one.
That's ridiculous.
Just all over.
You're right.
Like a Louis Vuitton bag replaced with Luigi's silhouette. It's the fucking weirdest.
I just don't get limited edition hardware.
Most of them are pretty ugly.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it so much.
Some of them are just hilarious.
Like the Pop-Tart, the Animal Crossing Pop-Tart. It's amazing.
Yeah, that one's really ugly. So actually, yet another game coming out this winter, although this winter could mean like January or February from Nintendo speak, is Mario Party 3DS. So, you know, they released one Mario Party on DS, one on GBA, and now they're going to have one on...
There's one salient question.
Yeah?
Does it have online play?
Exactly. That's when I read the report, you know, our write-up that had a summary of all the announcements, that was exactly what I was looking for. Didn't say.
Yeah.
Never a good sign.
No online play, no sale. And that's what it comes down to.
I agree. If this has online, I will buy it and I will play it with you guys and we'll have a great time. Voice chat, you know.
And you'll do that once in your life, Johnny.
But I'll buy it.
Wasn't there like a 3DS game that had online announced really, really late? Like, was it Mario Tennis or?
Yeah, might be Mario Tennis.
Yeah, I mean, look, if this game has online play, fine. We all buy it. We just record an episode of us playing the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it. And that's this whole episode. If it doesn't have online play, none of us will buy this game.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Nintendo, there's your challenge.
Yeah,
exactly.
Put online in the fucking game. Otherwise, you will not get sales.
It's Spike Lee said, do the right thing.
I don't know. One of us might bite the bullet for PAX or something.
No.
No?
No. Only if it's you, Guillaume. Only if it's you.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
To play at
Guillaume basically saying, I will buy this game regardless, Nintendo.
We're going to be playing Pokemon at PAX.
When you do have the people around, like Mario Party DS is actually pretty fun.
So I had the people around for the latest Mario Party, the one where you ride in a car, and that game's still fucking terrible.
No, I mean like handheld versions of Mario Party are actually pretty cool. Like they work really well.
There's only been two of them.
I could see it being very cool. It's just they're gonna have to do online, or I'm not buying it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if I was living in Japan, maybe, but I'm not living in Japan, so.
Are you sure, John?
Well, hold on a second. Let me look out the window. Nah, I think I'm good. There's like a homeless dude out there.
Nobody's homeless in Japan.
That's for sure.
It's daytime. It's probably a good hint.
All right. Well, I think we've covered all the other announcements already. You know, Donkey Kong getting new levels at the end of the game, and then the Guild Zero 2 games coming to the eShop,
which is exciting because they're cool games. They look cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. I haven't played either one of these, so I'm really stoked for these.
Bugs versus Tanks.
Bugs versus Tanks is so weird.
Yeah. I've heard it's really good. Danny Bivens.
Is it really that weird though? I mean,
yes, it's that weird. You're a commander of a panzer unit that got shrunk down and has to fight bugs to get made big again.
It's Army Men.
Yeah,
you know,
it's not Army Men.
You are literally a panzer commander who was shrunk down.
Hey, man, it happens. All right. You weren't there in the war. You don't know.
I read the press release that they sent out right after this, because again, I don't have access to all these gaming news at work, and I just had my press releases on my phone, and it reads like an old Nintendo Downloads press release. Like there's a point in the middle where you're just like, ah! You just throw the phone in the air and walk away because it's just too mind numbing to continue to read.
But the real surprise for, during the announcement was the Monsters Attack on Friday, because that one, like, we had,
yes,
like, people had spotted that Level 5 had trademarked, you know, the names, the titles for the other two games. But people immediately assumed, oh, okay, there was only two there, so I guess that the Monsters game is the one that's going to elude us, just like...
And that is the most Japanese of the three.
Well, yeah, it kind of made sense that perhaps like they would skip it. It looks fantastic.
It looks gorgeous. Yeah. If you haven't watched the video, go watch it right now. It looks absolutely gorgeous. Hmm. And it's so surrealist. Basically, it's this kid who lives in a part of Japan that every Friday the monsters from old 70s Japanese films come to life and do battle in town.
Oh, that's awesome.
And you see it kind of from the point of view of the kid, so everything is just gigantic, you know? It's it's kind of like Cloverfield in a way.
It's a weird spin on the Japanese genre of the slice of life character, where you're basically just following a kid as he sort of navigates this world where everything's daunting because he's a child. Oh, but as an aside, on Friday, big giant monsters come and fight in the middle of his town.
Yep. Cool. Well, I'll have to look forward to that.
Yeah, and like the other games, of course. Like what's the other one's name? Like the spaceship?
Oh, yeah, it's Big Dumb Name, Space Dumb Name, also with dumb words with a dumb name. Yeah,
It looks pretty intriguing. Like it
does.
Level 5 decided, like, I think they gave, like, strict orders to reviewers to not say anything about the plot or something. Like, they really want you to go in completely, you know, oblivious to anything that happens in the game. They want you to, like, the goal is that you're supposed to discover everything as you go along. And it looks pretty creepy, like, really creepy atmosphere.
Yes.
Everything is dimly lit. Old robots are just scraping the floor, coming towards you, and you don't know if they're gonna attack you or... And it's like, it's written by these, graphic novel... no, what am I saying? Graphic novel?
Visual novels.
Visual? Okay.
Visual novels.
Like these veterans of visual novels in Japan. So the Starship Damry is the name.
That's it. Basically, you wake up. Yeah, it's an adventure horror suspense game made by the guy who made Night of the Sickle Weasel. That's what I was trying to think of, which is a fucking insane Super Nintendo game. It's like a text-based game where you try to find a murderer in a ski cabin. It's ridiculous.
What? Night of the Sickle Weasel?
The Night of the Sickle Weasel. Yeah, there is an amazing, absolutely amazing episode of Game Center CX where he has to try to play this game.
That's awesome. It's so ridiculous.
It's the most insane game ever. But yeah, so basically you wake up from a cold sleep capsule on board the Starship Damery, and you have no memory of who you are, and there's no tutorials or explanations or hints at all. You're just dropped in the world, and if you figure it out, there's, quote, an inconceivable truth awaiting.
So it's like Tokitori 2 of visual novels.
Maybe. It seems like a really cool idea, though, being dropped into this world and just having nothing going on. I mean, part of what made the visual novels, the 999 series, palatable is because they worked in mechanisms to explain the world to you. But at the same time, I did kind of wonder what it'd be like to just wake up and there'd be nobody there telling you what to do. It's just like, oh my God, what do I do now? How the hell do I get out of here?
Right. And my problem with 999 was that you had to stick with it for a little bit too long for the payoff. So I'm perfectly fine with the kind of a bite-sized, visual novel like that.
Yeah. I mean, this could be really, really cool. I like the idea of it being a suspense-based game. Mm-hmm. And they call it horror too, but not a lot of games, trade in the currency of suspense unless they're just talking about like, oh, is something going to jump out of this wall? Is something going to jump out of this wall? It's because that it's more of a storytelling mechanism than it is just a, you know, is the you know, zombie dog going to jump from the window?
I could, you know, I've never played a visual novel game, and they're a little intimidating, and I'm also afraid to spend much money on them because I'm afraid I'm going to hate one. So, like a downloadable, smaller, bite-sized one, like Yom said, that might be a good way to, you know, try it out. If I don't like it, well, I spent $8 on it or whatever.
Yeah. Plus, you know, like, can you read?
Yes.
Well, you can play the game then.
All right. Well. I've really lowered the barrier of entry.
There's nothing to be intimidated by.
Johnny Zen.
Hey, Tokitori 2 must have an even lower barrier of entry in that case. That game has no words.
Can you see? That's No, I'm sorry.
Oh, then I have a Bit Generations game for you.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I mean,
Sound Voyager.
From the top level, like, this is actually a really kind of... It's a very interesting Nintendo Direct because it really seemed to be targeted at a very core hardcore demographic.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on here that is going to appease to a very small, tiny subset of the population.
Well, like, I love how they throw out Bravely Default is coming in 2014. How many people in America know what the fuck that is? Like, yeah. I don't think they gave any context for that. They didn't show video of it.
They gave a minute and 20-second trailer that's still in Japanese.
Yeah. But see, that gives them, you know, a year at least to hype that game to the moon, right? Right? Yeah. Right? Am I right?
Well, they've already had a year.
What's sad, the game that it is, quote, a spiritual successor to, Four Heroes of Light, is an amazing game that got no promotion from the company that made it.
Mm-hmm.
And... like, Bravely Default, I mean, everything I've read about it is that it's really an amazing game, and that it deserves any amount of hype it can get. So maybe they'll do something for it, but despite releasing a really cool trailer, it's only a minute 20 long.
Unfortunately for most people in North America, I think that the game heavily leverages Street Pass.
It does.
But for me, like, I've Street Passed so many people playing Fire Emblem and then Etrian Odyssey. And on the day of release, like Soul Hackers, that I'm not really worried.
Wow.
I think
you're going to be fine.
There's a lot of nerds over here.
So, yeah, I mean, to be fair, if we get this game before PAX, we're good to go.
Oh, yeah.
Because this game will be everywhere at PAX.
Hopefully it will be an early 2014 release.
My guess is like February. One of those games will fall into January, the other one will fall into February.
That'd be great, because you know what? With all these amazing looking 3DS games announced and the stuff that we already knew is coming out, I mean, it does look like a very packed year for 3DS. It's going to be an awesome lineup. There still aren't very many good RPGs on the system.
Mm-hmm. There aren't. I mean,
and Bravely Default, by all accounts, is probably the best RPG released yet for 3DS. And it's taking a long time to come over, but when it does, that it's still something to be excited about.
Yep.
Let me pitch a question then, considering all the stuff that was announced in the last, you know, 48 hours. Do we see any 3DS at Nintendo's E3 press conference?
Yeah, they have to.
I think there will be. There'll be some, but I think Wii U, that's going to be the focus. I think it has to be almost by default.
I don't know. Yeah, I had kind of the feeling that they were blowing their 3DS load right
now. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of how it feels. I mean, they announced a new Zelda game in a fucking Nintendo Direct.
Yep.
I mean, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
And not like the little stealthy announce thing they did with the Wii U game. Like they showed it to journalists a couple hours later in San Francisco.
Well, yeah. I think 3DS is going to be... I think it's pretty obvious that 3DS is going to be fine regardless of what they do at E3, right?
Right.
The Wii U's fate is still hanging in the balance.
Well, and ever since, you know... Since not including the first year they showed 3DS, which was the first time any of us had ever seen it or played it.
Right, and we all had massive fangasms.
3DS has never had a big presence at E3. You know, by far and away, the biggest thing going on with 3DS at E3 is that everybody's playing them and street passing them the whole time.
Yeah.
But, like, hardly anybody shows 3DS games because E3 is a North American focused event and North American companies don't fucking make 3DS games.
Yeah.
So, unless you're in Nintendo's booth, there ain't no 3DS at E3. And even in Nintendo's booth, it's still, you know, it's been pushed aside mostly because, I mean, part of it is they don't have to devote a ton of their booth to 3DS because they're small. Mm-hmm. So that helps, right?
Yeah, but they come attached to girls.
Yeah. They use 3DS demos as something to give you something to do while you wait in line to play a Wii U demo.
They really do. I mean, they walk up to you while you're waiting in line and like, do you want to play this? I'm like, not really, but I don't have anything else to do.
Because they assume that you're not going to wait in line to play a 3DS game.
Yeah.
And that's all I can figure.
I mean, they're right for the vast majority of the people there.
Yeah.
I think they would save space by having like a stand instead of a girl, because not only the 3DS comes attached to a girl, but the girl comes attached with like two Sony guys hitting on her. And it's just really awkward when you're trying to play and you're trying to
have. I think the reason that they don't just put out stands, A, because, you know, there is a certain amount of booth babyism there. But B, I think they actually want them to walk around and actively engage, because the last E3 I went to, they had the last DS Kirby game. I can't remember what it's called now.
Mass Attack.
Yeah, they had Mass Attack, and nobody was playing it. So basically, they put. I think I only saw this on the third day. They had two of the models. They took the 3DS chain that they had attached to them and put a DS XL on it, a DSi XL, and had them walk up to the line and say, look, this is a Kirby game. You should play it. And basically just shove it in your face until you played it.
Yeah, I have to think, too, that actually, like getting the 3DS in your hands and kind of playing it like you would normally, like if you're standing in line to get a coffee or something like that, that's kind of where you're going to play it. So I think from an experience standpoint, they probably like that more than having it kind of strangely, you know, awkwardly on a counter, you know, sometimes maybe, especially with the 3DS, where the angle at which you hold the screen really makes a difference.
Sure. Mm. And they used to do that with the DS. They had the DS row, where it was just basically a bunch of DS games on a counter.
Yeah.
But they let you sit down while you played it, which is key. No one wants to play a portable system stand.
Yeah, they did. Not that it mattered, because Nintendo's booth was like standing on clouds, so it's fine. But the last handheld game I remember standing in line to play at E3 was that the fucking Golden Sun video demo. Like, that's the last time I stood in line for a handheld game at E3. I've gone to two E3 since then. You just don't have to stand in line for them. They're just there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think having somebody, you know, bringing them to you and, you know, actively engaging is really smart for Nintendo's part, because people don't want to go. They don't attract the eye. They don't stand up well when compared to these HD games splashed across 72-inch screens that you could play. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for them to compete for the attention.
Yeah,
they need.
They're much. It's a much more personal style of gaming,
right? And it's not really well suited to the insanely loud echo chamber that is the LACC.
Yep.
Well, let me tell everyone a secret. E3 is a bad place to play video games.
It is
horrible.
It's a bad environment.
Yeah.
It's the worst experience I've ever had was playing a Rhythm Heaven game.
Yeah.
And I had headphones. It didn't matter.
That's
it was
a nightmare.
So loud.
All right, well, let's move on and talk about Wii U, because Nintendo sure doesn't want to right now.
Because Nintendo didn't.
Yeah.
They did say a few things, but it definitely feels, and I think just to get back to John's point real quick, it definitely feels like they're saving all their Wii U stuff for E3, everything that they can possibly afford to, because they want to make the biggest splash possible. They don't want to dribble out details about Wii U, because they know they need to make an impact. They have to do it right. They have to revive Wii U. They have to make some people talk about it in a mm-hmm. good way, or else it's not worth doing. So I really do think they're saving everything for Wii U, and maybe that is part of the point of doing all this huge 3DS news up front, is so they can really kind of clear the stage and really focus on Wii U at the show, because they need to. They really do.
Yep.
But anyway, they did drop a few little tidbits. The most notable one being, and I know people have been excited for us to talk about this, Earthbound is finally coming to the Virtual Console in North America and Europe in a few weeks, apparently.
Woo!
So that is a big surprise. We don't know.
John!
We don't know what's being modified, but probably there will be some changes, probably for legal reasons. We've talked about those in the past, but it's very good news. Very exciting. It's been a long wait, and I know a lot of people who bought a Wii hoping that it would come out on the Virtual Console there are maybe a little annoyed, but it is coming out. It'll be exclusive to the Wii U, at least for now. It's awesome. It's a great mm-hmm. game. James can make fun of it all he wants to. He doesn't have to play it. And we're not going to do retroactive on it. Sorry, Shaman, because we did Mother 3 already. But Earthbound is a fantastic game. If you've never played it, you absolutely should give it a shot. It's really special, and I'm excited.
Yeah.
I don't want to overlook the fact that a lot of people are going to get to play this game for the first time, which is wonderful. And they're going to do it for $8 or whatever they're going
to
charge.
Including me.
Yeah.
So I finally get to see what all the fuss is about.
There you go. And you can make up your own mind whether you like it or not. But that is obviously the best thing about this. But there's a secondary effect that I think is part of the reason people are flipping their lids so much over this announcement. It shows that Nintendo of America is finally back in the Earthbound business in some way. It's been almost 20 years since they shat out the first time.
No, that's not fair. And you can't call shat out. They gave a lot of PR to that game. You can't.
James.
You can't.
The marketing slogan was, "This game stinks."
Well, guess what? It did. It came with a fucking scratch and sniff.
Well, yeah. That doesn't change the fact that it's bad marketing.
Just
because
they did a bad job doesn't mean they didn't try.
It was a big release at the time. It didn't have an audience at that time. It was too quirky.
Yeah.
You can't say they shat it out. You can't. Yeah. They tried.
I don't think they knew what the fuck to do with it.
Yeah.
So
nobody did, because it's a fucking weird-ass game.
It is a weird game. It absolutely is. But anyway, this shows that they are, you know, they're doing something finally to appease fans over here, and they're going to introduce a lot of people to the series who've never played it before, which means that if there ever was another Earthbound game, or if there ever was an opportunity to bring the other games in the series over here, they might be able to justify it now. And or we might even feel like now there's even a chance that might actually happen, whereas in the past it seemed to be a really lost cause. So I think that's part of the reason people are excited.
Well, the thing is, right, at least this will give them a business case to do something else with the series, right?
They can see actually how many people buy it, yep, and then they'll know.
They'll have hard numbers to say yay or nay, and at least they'll be able to say to people, hey, it didn't sell as much as we thought, and people will say, all right, you got a point.
Earthbound fans say, nuh-uh, it's so great, because Earthbound fans are dumb babies.
Oh, James.
You're welcome, James, for that setup.
Oh,
they will, too. If this game sold one copy, Earthbound fans go, no, it didn't. It sold a million. Because they're big, dumb babies.
I just want to go on record. I do not agree with James on this stuff.
James's opinions are his own and do not affect anything in this set of this podcast or any of us.
So,
ever.
Like, do we know why there is no gifting option in the Wii U? Like, is it a matter of using real money instead of points?
Because the Wii U is Ayn Rand's personal console.
That, no, you could be right there, Guillaume. It might have something to do with the real money wallet.
Okay, because, like, if Nintendo plans on adding a gifting feature, like, they need to do it before Earthbound comes out. Because that's how they're going to sell copies. They're going to sell copies by having every Earthbound fan, like, gifting the game to everyone they know.
Evangelizing. Yeah. That's a great idea. I mean, I say on the one hand, this might be the reason that Nintendo hasn't done it yet, because they're kind of antsy about it, but, like, Steam does it, and Steam has a real money wallet, so... Mm. You can give stuff on Steam, and people do it all the time. So I think it could happen. It's just a question of will they and when. But it'll probably happen eventually. But yeah, that's a really good point. People can, you know, say, hey, you should really play this. I'm going to buy it for you. That would be great. You can always buy someone a download card and send them that. Hope that they actually buy it. Anyway, on to the next thing. The new Super Luigi U DLC pack is coming this summer. I think we already knew this, but there are 82 new levels. It's going to be very sizable. We still don't know the price or anything like that.
Is that, that's more levels than there are in the original game, right?
No, there's a lot of levels.
82 seems like a lot, though. I don't know if it was that many.
It is a lot, but I think it's about the same number as...
Do you want to guess on price? $20?
I'm guessing 30.
Yeah, some...
Going 30.
It's just probably about fair. I mean...
Yeah.
Between that... 20 or 30.
I don't know. I don't know for something downloadable like that. I don't know, man.
I think
I don't know. I think I think it's kind of a perception issue. I'm thinking 20.
I would like it. I would 25.
Didn't Mario launch at 50?
No, it launched at 60.
So yeah, I would say 30 here.
So that's kind of why I'm going 30. I feel like they could charge you half the original price, but
it was the least justifiable $60 Nintendo has ever requested from me.
That's not true. It's a great game. I was just thinking, to me, you know, it would be a shame to put so much effort into this if, you know, not that many people own Wii U's and not that many people are ever going to download such a big thing and spend that amount of money to download something. I think they could release like a special edition of the original game on disc that includes this content also.
They'd have to cut the price on the Wii U game, and they never cut price on New Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah,
games.
That's the problem. Like they'd have
the
to
the DS
make this
game
one...
still sells for its original price.
Right, they'd have to make this one more at. Expensive or something. So I'm not sure how they can do that. Maybe
it'd
it's
have
only
to be like
a,
an $80
maybe it's only a pack-in thing if you buy it with the system. But I could see them doing that eventually. So anyway, still looking forward to it. I don't think we know a whole lot of new information about it, but it's coming out a lot sooner than I expected. I thought this would be a fall.
But also, like we didn't see in the early footage that they showed that Luigi has his flutter jump.
Okay.
And so
he's going to control differently.
He's got Luigi physics. He can't stop on a dime, and he jumps higher. Cool. So yeah, it's classic Super Mario Brothers 2 gameplay.
Yeah, it's probably going to be harder.
Probably. Oh yeah. Well, like you've got a 100 seconds time limit this time. Like
really?
This. Yeah. This is like an expert pack, I suppose.
For every level.
Well, from what they've showed, like it looks like he starts at 100, and the counter goes down, and you gotta haul your ass to the end.
That's why there's so many levels. They're really short.
Well, they're gonna be also like you're gonna be playing them a lot because have you looked at the challenges that they throw at you? It's all like spiky balls everywhere, and you have to avoid them, and that's a little bit harder.
Sounds like John's bachelor party.
It's a little bit harder to do when you're playing as Luigi, because again, like he can't stop. Like he takes longer. Like he just slides around all the time.
Certain amount of fudge factor in the controls. So moving on, Pikmin 3 finally got a release date. It's August 4th. Only, what, 4 or 5 years after we first found out that they were making a new Pikmin game at E3.
One more delay, why not?
It kind of feels like they should release Pikmin 4 at this point.
Skip 3?
Yeah, just skip
like,
it.
No, fuck it.
Who
you
knows,
plug in
man.
3 and it goes...
Okay, so I don't have like an understanding of the industry as well as you... like. You know, like I'm new at this. Is this still Q1?
No, August. August
launch
is like
window.
Q3.
Yeah, it's launch window. Anyway, we did find out there's a new winged Pikmin type. I don't know. Did you guys see the video of this? Is it possible this is kind of a power up for your existing Pikmin, or is this definitely a new species?
They only showed that, like, out of context. Like, we didn't see Olimar plug them out of the ground, so it could just be an upgrade. But
what color was it?
They were pinkish, kind of.
That's probably a new one. Yeah.
Okay, that'll be cool.
Weren't the white and the purple Pikmin like basically upgrades?
No, they were new Pikmin types.
Yeah, you could only get them from certain places.
But you didn't like throw them in flowers or something? Like you threw your existing Pikmin in flowers that spit out back purple.
Oh,
Pikmin.
That's true. Yeah, they converted. That's true.
Yeah. They refer to them as quote new Pikmin types.
Yeah,
okay. Well, so I'm pretty sure that these flying ones are the same type of deal then.
Bah!
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, we'll find it. And the stone ones.
Nintendo hates plants.
All right. And the final bit of Wii U news that we got out of this is that Game & Wario is coming out on June 23rd in North America. There are no first party releases until then, which means there will, I believe, if I'm not forgetting something, there will have been a 3 month gap between LEGO City Undercover and Game & Wario.
Wow.
Great planning there,
yep.
Nintendo.
Good job.
Really,
good job.
Really impressive scheduling.
Well, it's not
this
like
year.
They front loaded all their releases into the front of the year. There just aren't
Reggie
any
was
games.
Like, yeah, the releases have been slower than we'd hoped.
But. Slower than we hoped.
Really?
This is what we were going for.
We were going for every other month, not every other 3 or 4 months. Yeah.
And it's got to be so frustrating for Reggie because there's nothing he can do. It's like being unemployed. Like all his money's running out. He sent off the applications and he's just waiting to hear back. And there's nothing he can do about it.
Yep. This feels like the death throes of the N64 where you got a game a quarter.
Yeah.
It's like, I hope you like this game because it needs to last your ass 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, this has to mean, though, that they're going to have a ton of games in the second half. That's all I can
you
think
would
of.
Hope.
I mean,
it has to.
It has to. I mean, it has exactly, Johnny. It has to mean that.
Unless their development teams are really shitty.
Well, we've got to see Retro's game at this point, right?
Yeah,
we're going to see it in June.
Assuming it's in a shape that it can be shown.
Project X is going to come out when? I don't know.
Not this year.
Not this year.
Probably not this year. But they will show it at E3 because they want to blow people away. That's the game to show.
Oh, yeah, because it will... I mean, I'll crap myself. I'll be sitting right in the front row and I'll just be like, I need new pants. Can we pause this for a second?
I'm really hoping that the Xenoblade sequel is playable at E3. That would be...
I would think so. I mean, it looked pretty far along.
That would be pretty hot.
It did. It looked really far along. I mean, we saw about 7 environments, multiple characters that were very detailed, and what appeared to be gameplay.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like you could at least probably play the boss battle, I would think.
They could throw a... I mean, they could just throw a demo out there of just like a Monster Hunter style demo, like you kill this one fucking boss.
Yeah, except with probably a tutorial that actually showed you what the hell you're doing.
And controls that work.
Controls that actually make sense. And
they said like a couple of months ago that the new Mario would be playable as well.
Yes.
At E3. Yeah, they did. And probably Wind Waker.
Wind Waker will be playable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure the remake will be playable.
My guess is that we get one more Nintendo Direct before E3 because it's about 50 days away. And it's probably not going to be much of a reveal.
You know, I don't think we will. It might be like right before, it might be like the day before the press conference like they did last year.
But that was really just to show off the Wii U system features. My guess is we might get one, but it won't really show us anything. And then all we get for 3DS is some kind of service that they show at E3. Like maybe they finally get their virtual console shit together on the 3DS and start putting out.
The day before the conference, they show the ability to play to download and play GameCube games.
On what?
On Wii U. Okay. I don't know.
I'm going to say on 3DS? Whoa!
That'd be nice. I mean, they have said the Virtual Console service is going to really kick off next week after the system update that speeds up the menus partially. Right. Soon after that, or maybe even the same day, they're going to start releasing Virtual Console games on some kind of regular basis. We're not really sure how frequently or how many a week. All the ones that they've announced, other than Earthbound, all the ones they've announced so far are, you know, things that already came out on the Wii. So if you already own the Wii version, you'll be able to upgrade for the reduced price. If not, you can pay the full price, whatever. But they're all currently all NES and Super NES games, and they've said N64 and GBA are coming later. So who knows when all that stuff's happening or what's the pace. I'm really interested to see what is the pace. Like, are they going to release 10 games a week? You know, or is it going to be more like, you know, the trickle that we had for so long on Wii? For games that have already been released on Virtual Console once on a different system.
Okay. I was going to say, because just look at what's going on in the 3DS eShop.
Yeah, it's not much better.
And even the Game Boy games have almost stopped, and the NES games, they're not really being released faster than...
They've stopped in part because they're pushing out all these eShop games that Nintendo either has a direct hand in or is sort of, you know, on the sidelines cheering on. Nintendo has published a lot of eShop games in the last couple months.
Yeah.
I mean, they 2 weeks ago we had Harmonite. I mean, that's a big game for them. I mean, that's their most expensive download game to date.
Yeah, I wonder how that's selling. I really
better
do.
Than Tokyo Crash Mode.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. I guess perhaps we can look at the number of people who have rated these games on the eShop.
Rated these games a 5, because that's the only rating.
That gives you at least a minimum, yeah. Well, speaking of, you know, NES games coming out on 3DS Virtual Console, two games that have come out are Mega Man 2 and 3.
Transitions!
So, just to segue into the outro here, is that okay, James?
No. Okay, go ahead.
So as we wrap up the episode, I did want to remind everyone that you have, when this episode comes out, 3 days max to go vote in the retroactive poll. So if you forgot to do it up till now, do not hesitate. Go do it, because time is running out. And on the next episode, we're going to announce the winner, and on the one after that, we're going to talk about it. So we're going to try to compress the schedule a little bit here. But it has been an interesting poll so far. A lot of good comments going both ways in the forum thread, which is exactly what I hope for. And I'm excited to play either one of these, whatever it comes out to. So go join the discussion and join the process and vote for either Mega Man 2 or 3. We're going to play one of them. Some of us are going to play both anyway, right? That's what
perhaps,
I'm
going to
Oh, yeah. I'm going to play both for sure.
I'm probably the one here who has the least experience with the NES Mega Man games. So I you know, I went and downloaded 2 on the 3DS eShop, which I had told myself I would never do because I already own it in some form. But
welcome to Capcomitis.
Yeah, well, the, you know, like the eShop version is so much easier than what's on the you know, the collection from a couple of years ago.
The controls aren't fucked.
No, yeah. No, but like it's a different ROM. It's a different version. Like yeah. they added the normal difficulty from the American version is easier.
Yeah, that's
they
right.
Didn't add it. It's just this is the NES version on 3DS. The one you played, Guillaume, was on the Anniversary Collection, which is actually based on the PlayStation 2 Japan only release.
Wait,
which
really?
which was based on the original Japanese Famicom release, oh, yeah. Which did not have the normal mode.
Right.
Right. It was just balls out.
It was just hard.
Get smacked in the face. Yeah. You're done.
It's a long twisty road to get where we are now, but that's
actually the shortest. The shortest lane in Capcom Plaza. And that's pretty much.
But all I want to say is that
direct line.
The eShop version is actually like a really good version. And
at first
I was dreading playing with like the B and A buttons because they're not ideal on the 3DS. Like they're a little bit too close to the edge. But you can play with X and A. That's slightly more comfortable.
Yeah, they did that a lot with the Anniversary Edition as well. If it was a two-button game, they made it X and Y work as the same as B and A.
Right.
Which didn't help you much on the GameCube, because then you were playing with the kidney beans.
Right.
Yeah, it's true.
I didn't realize it was different difficulties, though.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I don't remember that, but that's the thing. I just remember it being very easy, and I was not impressed at the time.
Well, just go to hard.
Yeah. No, but I'm just saying, now I'm fine with it, because I'm like, I just want to beat this game. But back then, I think what happened was I didn't feel like going back and playing through the whole game again, because really there was no incentive to beyond, yay, I want to play a harder game.
I do remember the Anniversary Collection, besides its busted ass controls, being really hard. So that explains that.
Yeah, and I think this might be the first time that I played the NES version, you know, as it originally released, and I'm very surprised at how easy it is, because you can just use your regular cannon and beat pretty much every boss and couple of hits.
And I mean, if you use the right, you know, gun against, you know,
one shot, a
single boss, yeah, like seriously, one or two shots kills them outright.
Yeah, that stuff gets way crazier in later Mega Man games, where it's like the only chance you have at taking down some bosses is using the right power, because they are damage sinks.
So look forward to more of this in 2 weeks.
That's right.
There you go. Transitions.
Maybe not Mega Man 2. We shall see.
Yeah.
It'll be one or the other. So the other thing is, because we're on a compressed time schedule, if you want to know the winner as soon as possible so that you can start playing it, since we'll have a limited time between when we announce it and when we actually discuss it, you can follow us on Facebook, or I should say like us on Facebook. Just search for Radio Free Nintendo. And we will post it there, and then you'll see it. Or you can follow @Nintendo_NWR on Twitter. That's the official Nintendo World Report Twitter. And anytime I post anything on our RFN Facebook page, it also shows up on the NWR Twitter. So either way, you will find out about it first, as soon as everything is confirmed. And then you can go ahead and get an early start on playing the game and discussing it in the forums.
It's like a social media Ouroboros.
I know. So that's all, folks. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Nintendo.
Bye.
Later.
Later.
I think I remember doing this, playing a very similar mini game in a Donald Duck edutainment title for PC back in the late 80s. I don't remember the name of it, but my friend Matt, who probably doesn't listen, but you guys saw him at PAX.
Yes.
He used to on his computer, I used to play at his house because they had a computer long before my family ever got one. And they had this, this Donald Duck edutainment game where you filled up a playground with a bunch of equipment for his nephews to play on. And in order to buy all the, you know, the slides and the cardboard boxes and the swing sets and all the weird crap that you filled up the playground with, you had to play these mini games to earn money. And one of them was very Japanese. You had to like do a switchboard for a train system. And then one of them was like organizing or like throwing luggage into the correct, I don't know, something like that. And there was another one where you were picking up produce off a conveyor belt and throwing it in the right box.
So you're saying Donald Duck is the original Miami Knights.
Yeah, basically a lot of busy work. And then at the end, you could take control of the nephews and run around on the playground and like play on. It was really dumb.
What the fuck?
Well, I spent hours and hours and hours and hours on
Oh
this.
My God. I mean, I had a PC in like 92. So, I mean, I've seen the sheer shit show of these edutainment games that came out at the time.
But I mean, it looked nice.
Oh, they all looked nice. That was sort of the gimme.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm going to put that in the outtakes.
I don't know. I mean, we're
do you want the help of the listeners to find out what the game was? Or
I do, actually. I want this.
Sure,
I'd
be interested. I mean, I could look it up. I just never bothered. There's also, at the same time, they also had a Mickey Mouse text adventure game.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my God!
Yeah.
Wow.
It had graphics, so it had, like, still cartoony artwork. So you could see the different settings that Mickey was going around, but you controlled it like a tech. It was like, you know, walk left, walk right.
It was King's Quest. You had King's
Quest. No, it was made by Allo.
By
it was a reskin of Leisure Suit Larry.
Nice.
Yeah.
Come on, you don't know
very,
who Allo is.
Very much
is.
Like it. Jeez. Yeah.
Johnny and I actually have a somewhat amusing story about playing this game in a Marrakeshi hotel, I guess is the best way of describing it.
What?
For whatever reason, was it 2 years ago now? I guess.
Yeah, almost 2 years ago.
No! The company that made this game. Decided to rent out a hotel that looks like it was airlifted from Morocco.
Nice.
And hosted an open bar event to show this game off.
It wasn't just them.
It was Soul Hackers,
but they also had a couple other independent developers there, and they were showing off a couple things on the side.
It was a weird event.
It was low key, you know. It was one of those E3 things that happens.
It was a very weird hotel, too.
Yeah, well, I've been to that hotel many times because I mean, I've interviewed Alexei Pajitnov there, and I've done a bunch because it's basically right across the street from the LA Convention Center.
They're like, it's like it's in that building, and you walk outside, you're like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird place.
Where the fuck am I?
Okay. So that was the anecdote?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
A good anecdote.